Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri. Welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. While much of Europe has suffered tepid growth in recent years, the economy of Azerbaijan has expanded spectacularly. Located south of Russia and east of Turkey, an oil boom has fueled a tenfold increase in the size of its economy since 2003, when President Ilham Aliyev took power. But under Aliyev, the country of 10 million has been one of the hardest and cruelest places in the world for journalists. According to Freedom House, Azerbaijan's government has used spurious charges to jail journalists and human rights activists. Disseminating information that harms the honor and dignity of Aliyev is a criminal offense. Journalists' telephone calls and internet activity are regularly surveilled. Azerbaijan's government is also infamous for its dirty tricks. It's become known for pressuring the family members of reporters to denounce them in state media. It's also run online smear campaigns against reporters who cover corruption and human rights abuses. Most notoriously, it tried to embarrass the well-known investigative reporter Khadija Ismailova by secretly recording and leaking a sex tape of her and her boyfriend in her apartment. When that failed to silence her reporting on issues like the Aliyev family's business interests, she was jailed in 2014 and later convicted of tax evasion, abuse of power, and illegal business activity. She was recently released this year, as were a number of other political prisoners. So on this edition of Global Journalist, we'll discuss the release of Khadija Ismailova and others and whether this is a new dawn for free expression in Azerbaijan. Joining us first from the capital, Baku, is Khadija Ismailova. She's won numerous reporting and human rights awards, including the Penn Barbara Goldsmith Freedom to Write Award and the Anna Politkovskaya Award for corruption reporting. Khadija, welcome to Global Journalist.
Hi, nice to see you.
You've worked as a journalist in Azerbaijan for almost 20 years. In 2010, you began publishing, I understand, a series of stories about the business interests of President Aliyev's family. Tell us just a little bit about what you had found out.
Well, the stories are basically very similar to those that are being published now within the Panama Papers project. My Panama Papers started in 2011. So I found the companies that are linked to the president's family, and that those companies enjoy all the opportunities in the market, and they hold monopolies on several spheres like telecommunication, airplane business, air flights business, banking, construction, and all sorts of other industries.
Well, so, what was the government's response to your reporting on this?
Well, first it was in the first report on the illegal bank privatization, they confirmed and they said the president's daughter has right to have a business, but they were silent about the illegal technique of privatizations because it was privatized illegally. And then in next stories about offshore companies and hidden interests in telecommunication, they were just silent. But what the government did, they changed legislation, and since 2012, information about the ownership of companies is considered a commercial secret in Azerbaijan. They changed the law, and we have no access to ownership of companies information. Plus, there was a retaliation on my personal price.
Right, and this is in 2012. I understand you were mailed photos of yourself with your boyfriend in your apartment with a threatening letter. Tell us about that episode.
Well, it was a time when I did a story about energy construction company, and the threat letter came to the apartment where my brother lives, and I'm registered as a resident. And, well, it contained very private pictures, and it seemed like it was filmed by a hidden camera. And then I did my own investigation. I applied to the prosecutor's office to investigate the issue, but they failed to even to start doing that. So they didn't actually failed. They didn't want to do any investigation, and I sued them for negligence in that investigation. The case is in European Court of Human Rights now. But I did my own investigation, and I found the cables that were linked to cameras. I found the telephone line that was specially installed for having live transmission from my apartment. And basically, all the facts say that it was Ministry of National Security and the government behind the filming, tapping, and secret filming. And it's obvious that the government did that, and the government tried to cover their crime. So it's clear. And when this happened, they probably expected me either to be silent, because to become silent, because it's not an easy thing for a woman in Azerbaijan where in out of marriage relations are not welcome, and honor killings are still taking place. So it wasn't an easy time, and when it happened, they probably expected me to shut up. I didn't shut up. Or maybe they were expecting that population will be angry with me because I broke the local taboos. This didn't happen either. And then nothing that they planned has achieved. But it was really hard time in my life, and it cost me a lot of nerves and a lot of psychological pressure.
Well, let me move to another point in time then. In 2014, you'd posted a document on Facebook that appeared to be a contract for a government informer, kind of a mole to be placed in the political opposition, and this seems to have brought about some legal troubles that eventually landed you in jail for over a year and a half. Tell us just a bit about that.
Well, no, actually, I didn't land in jail for that document. It was another case. I have plenty of them. It was another case on revealing a state secret, and I was accused of revealing a state secret because I published a document which was alleging that the Minister of National Security has blackmailed a member of opposition party for reporting to them, and put them on payroll and blackmailed so he couldn't be unhooked. So that was the case about. Then I was accused of inciting a suicide. A former colleague was forced to give a testimony against me. He attempted the suicide because of his problems with his fiancé, but he was forced by the officers of the Minister of National Security and Baku Prosecutor's Office. He named them. Said all their names later, to testify against me, saying that I harassed him, so he had to suicide. So I was arrested in December on the charge of inciting suicide, and then
he eventually recounted his allegation. You were later convicted on some separate charges. Then you spent a year and a half in jail. And I know our time does grow short, unfortunately, but tell us just a little bit what you plan to do now that you are out of jail. I saw that you had recently done an investigative report on the Aliyev family's business interests. They and a partner profited something like $64 million from a recent currency swap. Tell us just a bit about what your plans for the future are. Why do you continue doing this?
Well, because actually, the economic growth is going to end because oil is running out in the country. And it turns out that the country has not benefited from vast oil resources. And it's all because of the corruption of Aliyev's family. They basically, they wasted all the opportunities of Azerbaijani people to grow the wealth of their family. And What I'm doing, I'm just reporting on this. It's not that, again, I'm not investigating the family. It's just every corrupt business I investigate, they pop out of that business. Their name pop out of that business. It's they are everywhere in Azerbaijan. So it's if we discuss any corruption, any business, we end up speaking about Aliyev's family because their hands are everywhere.
Khadija Ismailova, thank you for joining us on Global Journalist.
Thank you.
A reminder that you're listening to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Today we're talking about the media climate in the Caucasus nation of Azerbaijan. To expand our discussion now, we have three other guests. Joining us from London is Melody Patry. She's a senior advocacy officer at the Index on Censorship who has traveled to Azerbaijan to research the media climate there. From Prague in the Czech Republic is Razul Jafarov. He's an Azerbaijani lawyer and human rights activist who spent 593 days in jail before being released in March. And from Washington, D.C., Arzu Gaybullah. She's an exiled Azerbaijani reporter and visiting scholar at George Washington University. Welcome to all of you. Razul Jafarov, tell us just a little bit. You've worked as a human rights activist reporter. You were arrested back in August of 2014. Just briefly, what led to your arrest?
Basically, the campaigns and activities which we implemented in terms of protection and promotion of human rights. And we did Sing for Democracy campaign in 2012. It was before Eurovision Song Contest, which is quite big thing in many countries of Europe. And we used this moment to bring attention of international community, not only to the song contest, but besides the song contest to human rights violation. And later on, we continued with different activities, criticized a lot government because not we like to criticize because of violations which we observed in Azerbaijan. And I also worked very closely with political prisoners issue, and we also prepared a list document on political prisoners in Azerbaijan. And I think all of the things made government decide to arrest me in them.
So you were jailed for this activism, for compiling lists of political prisoners, for the Sing for Democracy program. Tell us about your time in jail then. How were you treated? What was your relationship with people while you were in jail with your jailers?
I mean, there are different groups in prison of prisoners. First group is those who understand that you are and why you are in jail, and they respect you, they respect your activities. The second group is those people who also realize why you are there, but they prefer to be not so close to you and to stay out of things what you speak to them, what you explain to them. I mean, they are trying to be natural. And there were also certain groups which actually just don't like you and say about, you know, that they prefer that the people like me should do kind of things, but the number of are not big prison. I'd say that the second group who actually understand why they prefer to be natural majority.
I'm sorry, we're losing your audio just a bit, Razul. So let me turn this to Arzu Gaybullah. For a time, you have been working outside of Azerbaijan for an Armenian language newspaper. Armenia, of course, is the historical rival of Azerbaijan. I understand that you began to receive some threats. Tell us a bit about that episode.
Sure. Sometime in 2013, I was invited to join Agos, which is a Turkish-Armenian newspaper published in Istanbul, and is largely for the Armenian community living in Turkey. And I was writing in Turkish about what was going on in Azerbaijan. And for a while, I continued writing, and it was quite an interesting experience. And as a journalist who also worked on reconciliation and promoted conflict-sensitive reporting, I hope that this would also serve as an example in this environment, in this especially hostile environment between the two countries, except it backfired. In 2014, I was defamed. A number of pro-government media outlets prepared videos and stories describing why I was doing this and that I was actually a traitor and that I was representing Armenian interests. And slowly it went from being very personal, from personal attacks to actually involving my family and attacking them and making assumptions about my background. And eventually it all ended with death threats and a number of other threats. You know, people were discussing openly how they wanted to kill me, how I should have been punished for precisely this work. But no one seemed to mention my other work as a journalist and my publications in other outlets. Everything was focused on this particular case, and I was just literally made an enemy.
And Melody Patry, at the top of the show, we were talking about this release of political prisoners earlier this year, the release of Khadija Ismailova. Is this something of a new dawn now for Azerbaijan's government? Is this like a change in policy towards more openness and more tolerance?
Well, unfortunately, we cannot say so. We saw that Khadija was out of jail, but there are still many restrictions and her freedoms are constrained. Just yesterday, for example, her request to lift a travel ban was rejected, which means that she cannot leave the country. That can have serious repercussion on her journalistic activity. And that's the same for many other prisoners who have been released either on bail or who have been pardoned.
And how about you, Razul Jafarov? You're released from jail. Do you see that the release of you, dozens of other prisoners at the same time, is this something significant? Does this show that the government in Azerbaijan is making some sort of policy change?
Unfortunately, today we can't speak about the real political will that the government is interested to solve political prisoners issue in Azerbaijan. Because when you release some people and on another hand you keep others behind bars, it means you are not interested in solving this problem. And even after pardon decree and other releases, like decisions, we observe that it is still possible in Azerbaijan that critical voices can be arrested. And we have at least two cases when two youth activists arrested because of their criticism.
And Arjil Gaybulla, one thing that I wanted to ask you about, one thing I understand is common in Azerbaijan for people who are targets of the government is that their family members come under pressure and are sort of forced to denounce them. I understand that was the case in Khadija Ismailova's case. Is that something that's common?
Yes, it's something that's very common. I mean, we've seen it happen to journalists like Emin Milli, who is running a dissident media outlet out of Berlin called Maidan TV. His brother-in-law was actually targeted. The same in the case of other journalists like Ganimat Zahid, who is an editor-in-chief of Azadlık newspaper. Just yesterday, his two nephews were sentenced to 6 years on drug possession charges, which are obviously fraud charges.
So in other words, there were spurious charges brought against his family members for his role being sort of a political
opponent.
And
this is an ongoing case. I mean, my personal case. Absolutely. Sorry.
And sorry, you were saying in your personal case, you experienced something similar.
Yeah, it was my brother was targeted and he was also questioned and detained a few times. So eventually he also had to leave the country.
And Melody Patry, you traveled to Azerbaijan in 2013. What stood out for you about reporters on the ground there? What were some things that were in some ways unusual or different to you?
Well, something that was unusual is that some reporters, unfortunately, were behind bars. Although at the time, some of them were still free and able to work in an environment where they faced lots of pressure. I was able to visit Azadlik newspapers' offices and meet with reporters who were telling stories about authorities' intimidation. Some of them had been physically abused, attacked, beaten up when they were covering up stories, protests. They were really doing their job in a difficult environment. I also had the opportunity to visit the Radio Liberty offices that is today shut down. It was sealed by the authorities just before the arrest of Khadija Ismailova, and many of the journalists today are in exile. So in 2013, there were already lots of difficulties for the freedom of the press and of the media in Azerbaijan. But today, those organizations can barely operate when they haven't been completely shut down.
I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Global Journalist. Today, we're talking about press freedom in Azerbaijan. I want to turn the conversation back to you, Razul Jafarov. You're in the Czech Republic now after having been released from jail in Azerbaijan in March. Can you tell us, what are your plans for the future? Do you see yourself going back to Azerbaijan to continue doing human rights work?
In general, I base in Baku. I just started to travel to different countries because of my work, and I was invited to different events, and I agreed to come, and that's why I'm traveling.
But are you not afraid that you'll be put back in jail if you go back to Azerbaijan and begin talking about human rights violations?
I mean, you never know what can happen, and it is possible to expect, unfortunately, many things from authorities. But after release, me and my colleagues from the rights community, we decided to stay in Baku and continue our activities. We even made joint statement about this, that we see concrete problems in Azerbaijan related to human rights violation.
Well, let me turn this back to Arzu then, because we did talk a bit about corruption reporting at the top of the show with Khadija Ismailova. You talked about your work with an Armenian language newspaper. What, in general, are topics that are taboo for Azerbaijani reporters to write about?
The freedom of expression.
We lost your audio just briefly there, Arjo. Let me turn this to Melody Patry then. In your view, what are some topics that are taboo for reporters in Azerbaijan?
Many topics, from corruption to political engagement. I think that Arzu can reply to this question or Rasul better than I do. But something that is true is that everything that differs from the government line is taboo.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Arzu, go ahead and expand on that if you would.
So basically, democracy, human rights, freedom of expression, transparency, accountability, election observation, independent election reporting, most of these topics are taboo, especially if they differ, as Melody said, from the government line. And every time you write about this issue and you have proof, you're either labeled as a agent, as a traitor, they accuse you of misinformation. In fact, this is not just for Azerbaijani journalists. I will just give you a recent example of an Italian newspaper that published a story of corruption of 2013, accusing the government of Azerbaijan of paying a large bribe, over $2 million, to a European Parliament member who got in the way of passing the resolution on political prisoners in Azerbaijan. And the spokesperson, the head of the delegation of Azerbaijan to the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe said this was not true, and this was actually the work of Armenian lobby, and that it was a completely unsubstantiated information, which kind of goes back to what Khadija said earlier in her interview, that they refute or they don't respond, or in this case, they just accuse the writer and the outlet and the source of misinforming the public.
And I should say that we did invite representatives of the Azerbaijani embassy to come on Global Journalist today. Unfortunately, they did not respond to our requests. But Melody Patry, if I could turn this back to you on the subject of how to influence Azerbaijan, what role has social media had in this sort of discussion about press freedom in Azerbaijan and insofar as putting pressure on the government about political prisoners?
Well, the role of social media has been to provide an alternative narrative, especially within Azerbaijan, when TV and radio is mainly controlled by the government or by state media. So on social media, it has been easier to provide an alternative narrative to what's going on in the country for human rights reivindication, for democratic reivindications. It has also been the opportunity for the rest of the world to know more about what is going on in Azerbaijan, because Azerbaijan is spending lots of money on PR, on positive publicity. And it's important for us to raise awareness on the attacks on the press, the attacks on human rights activists, the attacks on political opposition activists. So the social media has been an arena to raise awareness on the deterioration of the human rights situation in the country, but also to give a voice to all those people who are being silenced or where there are attempts to silence them.
Well, our time does grow short, Arzu, with just about 30 seconds left. To the extent that oil money has fueled some of this repressive apparatus within Azerbaijan and oil prices have fallen, how has that changed the dynamic going forward for the Azerbaijani government?
Well, obviously, there's been a lot of shift and change in government image building or branding attempts. While they're still spending an incredible amount of money on events such as European Games or just what we recently hosted, the Formula One, for the Formula One race, there are some decisions to pull out of countries. For instance, the office of SOCAR, the state oil company that had a base in Washington, D.C., they're leasing the office now. And similarly, some of the SOCAR offices across Europe, they're trying to buy out because they have to cut on costs given the economic crisis. Having said this, within the country, within internally, it doesn't seem to have an impact on changes in budgeting. I mean, we still have enormous amount of funding put into image building, while the other sectors of the economy, such as education, healthcare, social services, they all are suffering.
We're going to have to leave it there for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri. Many thanks to Khadija Ismailova, Melody Patry, Razul Jafarov, and Arzu Gaybulla for joining us. Our executive producer is Joshua Kranzberg, and our producers this week are Javila Ruska-Skate and Jinhong Chen. Our studio director is Travis McMillan of RJI. Our audio engineer is Pat Akers of KBIA. For all of us here at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week.